the method.
Idea. Method became
unsound.
Are my methods unsound?
Without doubt. Do you call it unsound method?
I don't see any method at all.
Hello and welcome to Unsigned Methods with me, Lachlan Bloom.
And me, Jamie Batchin.
For those of you who've not listened to the podcast before, this is part of a series where we talk to fellow writers of literary fiction about their process and technique.
We've been away for a little while over the summer. We're back again. Thank you for sticking with us. And from now on, we will be putting out podcasts monthly.
In this episode, we speak to Azarine Vandervliet Alumi, author of the recently published novel Call Me Zebra. We talked about some of the themes in her work, including exile and world literature, as well as her approach to writing and research.
I wonder if we could start just by talking a bit about your route into writing.
Yeah, I started writing when I was pretty young. So I guess I kind of developed a more formalized process when I was in college. And I'd say I was about 18. And I was taking some really amazing literature classes and got very interested in the Latin American boom writers. So Gabriel Garcia Marquez and Mario Vargas Llosa and Borges. And I just sort of fell in love with writing, and it all started from there. So I just kind of kept at it and became pretty disciplined rather quickly. Uh-huh. Yeah.
What was the process to becoming disciplined? How did you go from reading and enjoying those writers to thinking it was something you needed to put discipline into, as opposed to something to do in idle moments? Or
right. Well, it sort of, the discipline came really naturally to me because I was kind of starved for writing and didn't know it. So once I discovered it, it just became an obsession. But then I also took a class with this writer that I really admire, Michelle Letellier, and it was a workshop class that was very structured, and you had to submit work every 3 weeks, you know, a week beforehand so that other people in the workshop would have time to read it. And she sort of championed my writing really early on and told me, you know, you've got to show up at your desk every day if you're going to make this work. And I think I was probably 19 or 20 when I was in her class, and I listened, you know. I just sort of started doing that and developed a daily practice from there.
Is that something that's stuck with you ever since? I mean, yeah. Was that difficult to begin with, or you say you kind of jumped at it once you discovered
it? It wasn't difficult, in part because I'm an insomniac. I don't sleep much, so I was always sort of awake, happened to be awake before everyone else, and just that space when the house is really quiet early in the morning, it, you know, just is a great space for writing. And yeah, it just kind of, I think, stuck with me. I don't tend to be very disciplined in other aspects of my life, but in this one, I'm very structured. And yeah, I think it served me well. I don't know that it's for everybody, right? Yeah.
And what's your process when you start something new? I mean, a completely new project. Where does it normally come from? Or is that a question that makes sense? Is there a normally in terms of the start of a project?
Yeah, I think it's pretty chaotic for me, in the sense that I kind of have a feeling or a mood that I'm really interested in, or an image that I'm trying to pursue. And it's sort of like pulling on a thread and watching it unravel. And that process often can take a couple of years for me. So with Call Me Zebra, it probably took about 3 years of intense reading and reading a wide variety of books so that I could figure out exactly what the timbre or the tone of the voice needed to be, and a lot of note taking and a lot of just sitting at my desk and drafting and drafting and drafting pages that I later had to throw out. So I probably, you know, the book manuscript is 300 pages. I probably wrote about 600 or 700 pages, and half of them were just exploratory. And
did you make a distinction between note taking and drafts? I mean, are there notes that are more, do you have more fragmentary ideas first and then move on to writing something that might be a draft of a chapter, or is it all kind of mixed together?
No, it's different, actually. So I keep a notebook and I'll write down images that, you know, for Call Me Zebra, for example, you know, because I was sort of traveling while thinking about the book, I went back to Catalonia and was going to specific sites or landscapes. And I was recording just, you know, images, lights, sounds, colors, and then also then transcribing a lot of quotes from the writers who had written about those spaces as well. And sometimes then a scene would just kind of evolve naturally and I would write down parts of it in the notebook and then obviously go to actually, you know, do the draft of the chapter and expand on it. And then continue to revise it from there. Mm-hmm. And I also use a lot of post-it notes. And
is that within the notebook? I guess when you're talking about a notebook,
I sometimes store it in the notebook, but then once I'm in the writing phase, I spread them on my desk. So some of them will be stuck to my computer screen in the in the order that I wrote them or that I think they need to sort of be for the chapters that I'll be working on. And then I'll have post-it notes to my right and my left. And sometimes the ones on my right will be quotations or citations that I want to use in the book. And then I'll also keep a word list. So when I'm reading, there are just words that I love that are just particularly exciting to me. And I'm, you know, think about how I would use that word in a sentence or in a book. And some of them are just really banal words, but having the list helps me.
I mean, is that because you speak Italian, Spanish, English?
Yeah, and Farsi, yeah.
And Farsi. So
yeah.
I, you're kind of working in several different languages. Is that word list exclusively words in English to write in English?
Yeah, it's words in English. And I think it just helps me because I think in so many different languages that I don't always have access to vocabulary in the right language I'm thinking in. And having the word list is a good crutch. Yeah.
When you said earlier about reading, doing some research and reading books before you begin a project for the tone.
Yeah.
How do you decide which books to go to? How do you have a sort of, is it books you, I assume not usually books you've previously read?
Yeah.
That's
one of those impossible questions to answer. I'm a very intuitive person / writer. So usually it's sort of by happenstance, I'll come across a book and it'll have exactly what I've been looking for. And then there'll sort of be a clue in that book for what I need to go to next. And pretty quickly I find this kind of constellation of books that are speaking to one another or in conversation with each other. And it's a lot like detective work. That's what it feels like finding clues. And I'm mostly in the dark and every book that I discover feels like a revelation. So for Call Me Zebra, for example, I was reading a lot of Walter Benjamin. And then I picked up some Nietzsche that I had previously read as a teenager. And then the style of that book was so remarkable to me, of his writing. He's so funny and serious and stylized. And so he has this one kind of manuscript called Ecce Homo. So then I thought about other places where that sentence had been used. So then that led me to Primo Levi, If This Is a Man, and looking at sort of Picasso's reinterpretations of paintings that were called Ecce Homo. And so that sort of is how I'll usually travel between texts and paintings.
So are you quite flexible then in terms of the sort of drive for the novel can sort of change as you're in that research phase?
Yeah.
You don't start with a sort of overarching plot or
any no.
kind of idea what it's going to be about. And as you read, you kind of
no,
pick these pieces and slowly aggregate a kind of sense of the space it's going to live
in. Exactly, yeah. It's a very slow sort of tortured process. I'm laughing because sometimes I wish I was plot-driven or outline-driven. I'm not that kind of writer at all. And even once I found the shape of the book, I might not know where it's going in the next chapter. So it's sort of every sentence leads me to the next sentence.
And how do you sense that you've reached the shape of the book? Is it something that you suddenly materializes out of the fog for you? Or I mean, I guess it might be different projects, but or is it just...
Yeah, it depends on the project.
A sort of will-o'-the-wisp that leads you in a direction that intuitively feels right.
It's sort of like drawing blood, you know? It's sort of you poke the needle in and you're poking around and nothing's happening. And then at some point, it's just sort of you find the right... you know, spot. And for me, the way I know is the pages start coming really easily and they don't feel, the process doesn't feel conscious anymore. And I'm less troubled. And I lose track of time in a very particular way. And that's how I usually know I'm in the right space.
And is that tied in with finding voice at the same sort of time?
Yeah. So part of the drafting for me is finding, you know, the voice. I mean, it's also interesting to think about the voice as if it were something outside of ourselves. I think it's really finding my own voice, but the version of it that makes sense for that book, right? And because this was a book about exile and literature and has some, you know, emotionally autobiographical elements tied in, it was a lot of just descending into those feelings and that level of vulnerability. So it required a lot of work because I'm kind of a pretty conceptual or intellectually driven person. And part of the project of reading for me is learning how to descend into the emotional landscape of a project. And that's, I think, where the voice comes from for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And once you get to that stage, is it for this project, you sort of round about 2 years maybe of research, note-taking?
Oh, no, more. It was about almost 3.5 years, yeah.
Quite a long period of time. Yeah. And then when you get to that point where you are sort of effortlessly or relatively effortlessly turning out page after mm-hmm. page, is that close to the finished draft? Do you sort of write a whole chapter and that stands as it is? Or do you write half a chapter and then move to another section and you end up with lots of different drafts that are not necessarily connected one after the other?
Yeah, I see what you're asking. So just in terms of timeline, it took me after I never finished doing the research. I was still reading, but probably not as intensely as I had been for those first 3.5 years. It took me about 3 more years after that to really finish the book. And the last 2 years, I was writing 8 hours a day and very few days off a month. It was pretty intense, but I was using this thing called Evernote, which, So I would draft a chapter and that might take me a couple of weeks, sometimes a month, and then rewrite it. So I'll write a page and then rewrite that page the next morning and expand on it. And that's how it sort of doubles and quadruples for me.
Was that rewriting process? Was that like a sort of something that you did for every page? Sort of thing? I mean, whether you felt it worked or not, you'd look back at it and try to rewrite it?
Or it depends.
Only if something felt wrong?
It depends. If something felt shallow, I would rewrite. If something felt like it was vibrant and already there, I would leave it alone, keep moving, but then always have to come back to tighten and clean up. But that's a lot easier than having to really reconsider the representation of a scene or a particular moment. So it really depended paragraph by paragraph. Kind of some of the internal monologue for me in the book, that comes really naturally, and there's less editing that I have to do around that. The kind of descriptions of landscape and the sort of character descriptions, I tend to do more editing around. So yeah.
And for the landscape and things, is that from memory, from places you've been to, or is that just an imaginative process that you just
both?
Yeah,
both. And I mean, for the sections in Catalonia, I actually walked all the spaces that appear in the book. I actually did the same walks that the character does, using the same books and you know, taking notes, looking at, for example, I mean, a really easy example that has nothing to do with this book that I've done in Italy is looking at Henry James's Italian hours and going to those exact same spots that he describes in his book and reading the passages, looking at the space, sometimes maybe photographing it, and then rewriting that same exact space in my notebook and looking at the way that it might be similar or different. So it's sort of a, I don't really think that we experience space directly. We sort of experience it through our imaginations and the ways that it's been mediated for us through film or photography or images, stories we've heard, right? And so I'm really interested in writing space through all the spaces and ways in which it's already been represented. So it's, yeah.
And is that the work you're doing in Italy, is that towards a future project with a definite aim in mind?
It was originally part of the same project. So I thought that the book would take me all the way through Italy. And then those pages ended up having very little to do with this book. And I realized that maybe 4 or 5 years in. Yeah.
And do you, when you realize that something isn't related or it's not going to go where you think it,
yeah,
it's going to go, do you tend to come back to projects that, or does that just sort of sit in a drawer somewhere? And
it's sitting in a drawer at the moment, but it really depends. Some things I know aren't worth going back to. This one in particular, I really do want to go back to. It feels like a twin project, but the voice is very different. And I know that sort of, I don't know how, but it, slightly more anonymous. That's what I kind of, my feeling around it is that whatever voice would be describing these spaces would be more anonymous and less idiosyncratic. Yeah, I think I'll return to it at some point. I'd like to, but probably not right away.
Mm-hmm. And how much sort of planning do you do sort of structurally before project? You were talking about the writing and then the shape of this story comes out, but I assume you sound like a very sort of research intensive writer. So do you have a sort of ghost of a shape in your mind that you're working towards and then that's pliable enough that you could change course?
I think that's a good way to put it. Yeah, I'd say there's a ghost of a shape and then it sort of materializes more and more over time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I assume takes you in sometimes in a different direction to where you...
Yeah, I mean, the book is always going to take us in a different direction. I think that's the whole process of writing, is that conversation between the writer's sense of agency over the work and the work itself. And I think that there's can be a lot of conflict there. And for me, it's sort of about figuring out what I have to resign myself to. And often it's not comfortable, you know, it's like walking a really stubborn dog. And I eventually submit myself and then think of my role as more, you know, shaping and finessing or fine tuning something that was already there in the world, but I just sort of am capturing it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that makes a lot of sense, but that's the feeling.
Sorry. Yeah. Is that like a piece of furniture that's sort of smoothing the edges off?
Or like a sculpture or something, you know, you're just kind of, the stone is already there and you're just kind of shaping it. It's a very abstract, intuitive process that
And is it entirely intuitive, would you say? I mean, when you come to... I guess both in terms of writing for the first time and when you come back to edit it, when you look at something and decide that it's bad or wrong in some way, what sort of thoughts are going through your head? Is it something that is entirely intuitive and it's not really anything you can conceptualize, or are there elements that you look for in bad fiction that you could sort of generalize? And
So one thing is, it's important to say that while I'm really intuitive, I'm very systematic about the way that I spend my time writing, sort of the discipline aspect, but also in my reading habits, you know, so I'll discover the books in an intuitive way, but then I read them systematically. Mm. And that I think is a good sort of balance, because I think if everything was just so intuitive, I mean, or just there wasn't any pushback from me or any kind of shaping, then the project would probably never take form. On the other hand, the second part of your question is...
Sorry, so I was asking just, when you look back at fiction, how do you know? Right. I guess it's more what are you looking for to say that this is bad, this piece of fiction, that something needs to be changed here?
Right. So one thing that might be of interest is I'll actually record myself reading the chapter and then hear it back, play it back. And when I play it back, I can see where it's shallow or not quite as honest, that I needed to go one level deeper with it. Mm. And I can also see the rhythm. So I'm very sound driven. So if the music feels off, if there's a note missing, that's how I know I need to go back and probably fill it in or remove some things. Sometimes, less is more. Mm. So that's kind of how I know, is by listening to it.
It's quite an interesting process to record
the whole chapter.
And is that once you kind of get to the end of a finished chapter, but before you get to the end of a finished draft of the book, or do you wait until you've got a kind of finished draft and then read the whole thing like an audio?
Oh, no, I do it section by section. So... Then I was also very lucky that my editor was reading alongside me, but I would probably send her chunks, sort of like 50 or 60 page chunks. Mm-hmm. And then she'd say, okay, I think it's time to move on. I'd move on. And then there was a lot of stitching together of the sections and moving what may have been the beginning of the second section to the end of the first. Mm-hmm. That kind of... Those transitional moments or notes were very delicate, and I couldn't actually work on those until we had the full novel and we're looking at it and rereading it so many times. I would read it, she would read it, then someone else would read it for me. And yeah, I'd have to revisit those sections mainly, more than the content. But we did cut quite a bit once we were at that stage.
Yeah. You'd be cutting then more than... You wouldn't be sort of moving something from chapter 2 to chapter 6 or making those sort of changes.
We'd be playing with the endings and beginnings were felt movable, but mainly once I was sort of in the middle sections, we were mainly cutting scenes that... It wasn't that they weren't necessarily speaking to the book, but maybe they were slightly repetitive, or, you know, we were... sort of looking at ways in which we could tighten the book. So yeah, some scenes could be let go of. Yeah.
And with the relationship with your editor, how early into the process were you speaking to your editor about it? Was that just from the initial conception, the idea, or when did that start to work?
It started, I think it was maybe late 2015, early 2016. So pretty early on, she picked up the book when I had about 40, 50 pages of it. And the pages that I had turned out to be maybe one third into the book. Mm-hmm. And so she also had some pages that turned out to be, you know, the ending chapter of the book. So once she took it on, we were kind of in conversation often. Every probably 6 weeks we would check in, and she would read and then send me feedback. And it was every 6 weeks or 5 weeks. She was really wonderful, and I was lucky to have that.
What was the process of working? Have you worked with her before? Or?
No, I hadn't. The editor for my first book, she picked up the book when it was already finished, and it was very light editing. But, you know, I switched houses, publishing houses, and Naomi Gibbs at Harcourt in the States, she was just the perfect editor for me and for this book, because she doesn't necessarily interfere. She just kind of would gently nudge me if I needed that. But she was very good at kind of letting me have the vision for the book that I needed to have. And sometimes she would just reflect earlier on, you know, I think the tone has gone a little too far towards the grief, and we've lost some of the verve in the voice. And then or vice versa. And it was sort of, the difficulty was finding a voice that allowed for both sides of the narrator's personality, the kind of hysterical, funny side and the really sort of long internal monologues about exile and sort of being unmoored in the world. And it was kind of, how do you marry these two voices together? Mm. And so a lot of her help had to do with that.
And did the change of how much editorial attention you had, considering with your first book it was a finished product more or less, mm-hmm. and it was just tweaks, did that have any effect on your sort of writing process as you were working with it, or was it just useful feedback that fed into it?
I mean, is it easy to take editorial? I guess I presume there's some criticism in there, in the sense, you know, to positive criticism, but it's still criticism. Is it something you've find easy to deal with?
I think when you find the right editor, it is, it's a relief, you know, because it kind of, I think with the wrong editor, it could be terrible, but if there is a good relationship there and you feel supported and, just sort of left alone enough, then I think that the criticism or the feedback can feel really helpful and help you kind of unlock and not waste more time going down paths that may not be necessary. And I didn't at all in any moment feel that my editor was trying to commercialize the book or change the spirit of it. I was very fortunate in that sense, and I'm, you know, hoping to work with her in the long run. Yeah.
Sounds a good relationship.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
That's a very cosmetic thing, just out of interest. Now that this is a British publisher publishing your book, I know some British writers who've published books in America that have had an edit for the American market. Has your book been changed at all?
No.
For the British market?
No. The spelling was made consistent with UK, you know, British standards. So like the spelling of the word color.
I wonder why they even do that, really, to be honest. I mean, but yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense to me, and I was happy to let them do that. There may be a few questions that came up, but very, very few. I mean, the book was, I think, in pretty decent shape, and
I suppose that's sort of how culturally specific some things are, that might just come down to.
Yeah.
It depends on the book.
The spelling.
Yeah. You get enraged letters from people about not having a U in the colour and flavour, etc.
I know the book, it sort of brings together a lot of cultures, and I mean talks about exile and moving through and into different cultures. I don't know what your perspective is on literary fiction in different cultures. Do you see it as a sort of global homogenous thing, or are there different places within your head for books you've read in Farsi compared with books you've read in English and books you've read in other
different
languages?
Yeah, I guess if my head were a library, the books would be stored according to, you know, the language they were written in. But it's not the way that I think about literature at all. I think, in fact, it's kind of there's no national boundaries around books. And if we read across time, we quickly can realize that, you know, the nation state is a pretty recent concept. And the way that we think about literature along national lines is very recent as well. Mm. So I'm more interested in the way that books cross boundaries and the circulation of ideas across time, and the way that maybe a writer like Dante will be speaking to Borges or vice versa. And of course I'll think this is a Japanese book that I read from the 17th century, but it's so interesting the way that maybe Robert Walzer is in conversation with that book, right? Mm. So it's I think it's kind of a big space without checkpoints, in a sense.
Mm. And do you write in other languages as well? Or?
No, I don't. Only English.
Yeah. It's sort of interesting. It sort of highlights again from a conversation we had quite recently with Will Eaves, I think it was, about the importance of reading and how it's one of those things whenever, especially at university courses, one of the first lessons is, you know, reading is really important if you want to write well. But it absolutely is, isn't it? And
yeah.
The wider and more deeply you can read, I think,
yeah,
the more it's got to say to your writing.
Yeah. I think there are lots of young writers who make the mistake of thinking that they don't necessarily need to read in order to write. I think there are people who sort of write in a vacuum. It's not the kind of work I'm interested in reading personally. I really do believe that, you know, the reading is the best instructor you could have.
And yeah. How do you see sort of more traditional literature, and I mean books and writing that's sort of published in some form, as opposed to this sort of vast continuum of words that are out there on the internet, or mm-hmm. everything from WhatsApp chats to
right.
Yeah, I mean that, people are still reading when they're reading a WhatsApp chat, but I think there's a sort of there can be a sense of... that's not, nothing to do with reading a play by Shakespeare or Borges or something else.
Yeah, I think it's more about kind of levels of attention, right? So there's deep attention and there's more kind of surface reading. And when I'm reading on the internet, yeah, it's reading, but it's not the same. For me, it doesn't sort of, it's not as magical.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
and do you have any, I guess, tricks or methods to avoid getting sucked into the black hole of the internet and get into that zone of sort of deep attention and...
I think when I'm good about being in that space, I probably don't even really look at my email or open the internet in the morning. I think that's the best thing I can do, is just kind of suspend it till 2 o'clock. Because once you open that door, it's so hard to close it. It just warms its way into your brain. And I haven't been writing that much this last 8 months. And I know exactly what you mean. I wasn't as susceptible to it before because I just sort of, I'm not an internet. I wasn't raised with it in the same way, but I think I've gotten addicted these last few months and yeah, it's going to have to be something I manage.
It's just like a constant rabbit hole that just exists there.
And it's so addictive. I don't understand why.
Yeah, well, they've got teams of people in Facebook trying to get into your brain.
Yes. Not even the social media. I just mean, like, if I will suddenly think, I'd be writing something and you'll wonder, oh, what's the time difference between here and Madagascar?
And then
or
before and, you know it, you're gone.
You're reading about, like, Algerian punk or something. Yeah. What? How has that happened? How did I end up looking at this?
Yeah. There's this application called Freedom where you can block your internet.
I have to use it.
Yeah,
exactly. Says something about my level of discipline. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I just think it's so hard because that's the thing. You go to look at a word on thesaurus and you can get sidetracked, right?
And you mentioned you, in terms of your reading, you sort of quite free in terms of finding the books, but you're systematic in terms of reading them. So do you kind of segment your time, like in a week, say, okay, I'm going to spend 2 hours Tuesday morning reading this, and then I'm going to stop and I'm going to move on to writing something? Or
But I only decide that maybe 2 days at a time, because again, it's part systematic, part intuitive. So at the end of the 2 days, I'll be like, okay, now I need to move on to this other thing. Or sometimes it's just about immersing myself in one book for 2 hours and then writing, and then maybe thinking, okay, I'll read this other text. You know, I often move between texts like a bee, you know, I'm just sort of cross-pollinating all these other ideas. And I think that helps me not to get stuck in one voice that isn't mine. Mm. It kind of helps to, you know, the more kind of variety you're reading, the easier it is to stay in your own space while you're writing, I think. Mm.
Do you find it easy to kind of block out the noise of when you're reading? I know some people suggest that they won't read at all when they're writing because those voices then dominate, especially stylistically, what they're writing. Do you find that happens? I mean, it sounds like you probably are quite well insulated from that.
No, I think once the book finds its shape, it gets harder to read, and I'll maybe read, you know, 5 pages of something and then move on. I won't necessarily sit down and read whole novels while I'm writing. That definitely doesn't happen. Yeah, there's a moment where you just do have to close the door, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It all seeps in too much from the outside world.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's a critical point for me where I do that. It's not the first 4 years I was reading, reading, reading. And then maybe the last 18 months of the project is when I was just looking at the citations I'd accumulated and revisiting certain pages or reading certain books like Oracles, the way that my narrator reads books in the novel. And I found that that was really fascinating too, because sometimes I would just open a book and it was exactly what I needed. And that's bizarre. It's pretty uncanny, yeah. But I loved it. Yeah.
And do you only write prose? Do you write fiction or plays or anything else as well?
I write fiction and nonfiction.
Uh-huh.
I haven't written any plays, but who knows, maybe in the future.
And do you find it's a different approach writing nonfiction to fiction? Is there anything you'd sort of put between the two to separate one from the other, or something that one can achieve that the other can't?
Yeah, I think that I probably am more structured when I'm writing nonfiction, and it's just a different part of my brain. There's, you know, facts act as signposts in nonfiction, and so they're sort of flagpoles in the ground, and I know that I have to get from flagpole A to flagpole B. Mm. And so, you know, writing an essay can take like 3 weeks or a month, depending on what it is. If it's literary criticism, sometimes longer. But it's less tortured of a process for sure for me.
I guess that's the safety of the facts that you've got there as well. Yeah. A little bit. You can choose how much to
reveal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Whereas with fiction, you can just, there's not really a limit to the kind of vista that's in front of you. You have to decide how much to pen in. And
it's sort of like a ginger root, you know, it can just keep growing so many limbs. But with fiction, it feels more linear to me, and quite a relief to be writing essays right now after having been immersed in the novel for so many years.
I guess as well, you're more often working to a deadline, and a shorter deadline with nonfiction.
It's right.
Sort of exactly. Weeks rather than years.
So yeah. And if you hand it in, you know, after you're going to place it, or someone's, you know, commissioned it or whatever. So it's a lot easier not to lose my way.
And are you consciously having some time off starting a new novel? I don't know if you've started one yet, or are you giving yourself a break?
Uh-huh. I'm giving myself a break, partially because I was really exhausted by the time I finished. So the first 3 months after I was done, I really felt like a zombie and just wanted to sleep all the time. And that's what I sort of allowed myself to do. And then now that I've been on book tour for the last 2.5-3 months, so it's been traveling nonstop, and I've written maybe 4 or 5 essays this year. That's about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And how is the promotion? How does it feel to have to go back? Something that's been a very long project, and in your mind, I assume, is kind of, that's done, that's out in the world. Do you enjoy the process of going back and talking about that one specific book for a period of time?
I don't think about books in that way. Like, you know, even with my first book, I'm still really excited to talk to people about it, because I guess I'm always shocked when writers are sort of like, I've moved on from this book. And I think, how is that possible? I mean, it takes so much, and I put so much into a book that it's like the moment when I'm no longer alone with it and someone else is reading it and it's doing something for that person. Like, what could be more exciting or meaningful than that? And I don't think, you know, I think I'm sort of afraid of that language that feels like the sort of capitalistic kind of relationship to literature, where it's like a, you know, it's not a bottle of milk that you're going to put on the shelf for. So yeah, I'm not afraid to let a book take years and years of my life to write. And then once I do that, it's always going to be a part of my life, you know. My relationship to it will probably change, but it's too soon for that, I think.
I like that as a way of looking at it. I think that's, it's good, because it is such a part of your life. It's not just you were going into an office and doing some sort of data entry that was some obscure task. It's really, you have a proper relationship with it in a quite literal sense.
And it teaches you something through its readers. And I think I guess I'm more interested in doing events. I'm more interested in what the book is doing for other people. And I've had some people write to me who, you know, have been living in exile, or writers who are exiled, and just sort of the language that the book provided for them and hearing them talk about that, it just kind of makes, it just makes all the 7 years more than worth it.
Well, thank you for listening to our chat with Azarine. And Azarine, thank you for joining us.
That was episode 13. We'll be back again next month. In the meantime, you can find us at unsignedmethods.co.uk. You can find me and my writing at lachlanbloom.com.
Or you can see my stuff on jamiebatchin.com, or follow me at jamiebatchin on Twitter.